Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to the Mitchin, a weekly food podcast hosted by two rude dudes who love their foods.
I quit again. Don't edit that out.
My name's Andrew Levins. My reluctant co-host is Mitch Orr.
Hi, Levins.
Who you may see cooking at Acme Restaurant in Potts Point. Today we are joined by two guests. Someone returning for the first time in a long time is a good friend from Momofuku Seibo, the restaurant manager over there. Do you want the Bogan pronunciation of your last name or the bougie pronunciation of your last name?
Bogan. Let's get Bogan today.
Kylie Javier. But is it Javier? Is that
Javier? Yeah.
All right, great.
Hyphenated Ashton.
Yeah. Oh, no hyphen.
No hyphen?
Nah, don't just like space. The dash. Just space. The space.
What's the bougie pronunciation of Ashton?
Ashton.
Also joining us again for the second time this month is our pal from Pinburn, Mike Eggert.
Rhyming.
I'm just trying to
enough
appeal.
Alliteration.
I'm so whimsical after Easter. I just spent the entire time doing Easter egg hunts with 3-year-olds. It was great.
I just figured you were farting a lot because you ate chocolate.
So we got a pretty heavy show for you today.
Heavy.
It's been a bunch of shit news. It's going to very negatively affect the hospitality industry in Australia. The biggest news being that Malcolm Turnbull, our lovely Prime Minister, has outlawed the 457 visas, which basically allow people to immigrate to Australia with the purpose of working in kitchens.
He's like a fucking peeled cucumber in a suit. I fucking hate that dude.
Peeled cucumber. And we're also going to talk about a few high-profile Melbourne chefs who've been ripping off their staff. That'll be fun as well. But before we get to that heaviness, I thought we should talk about the dumbest story that I read this week. And it ties into my Easter whimsy. This is a horrible Easter egg hunt that left children in tears in Geelong. There was a public Easter egg hunt which turned bitter after parents accused the organizers of confiscating chocolate from their children and making them cry. So basically, there was a $15 entry fee to do this public Easter egg hunt in Geelong.
Sounds like the only Easter egg hunt I would have wanted to go to.
Yeah. And just to clarify, most children in Geelong are crying all the time because they're in Geelong. So I don't know if it's the Easter egg hunt's fault or if it's just a standard thing with Geelong kids. Well,
funny side note. 100% of the people who were angry at me for playing Justin Bieber at Meredith Festival in 2015 were from Geelong. So it was $15 to get into this Easter celebration, this Easter egg hunt. And apparently they didn't get enough eggs. They were like the $1, shitty eggs from Aldi, according to one parent. And they were given these tiny bags that could only fit a couple of eggs in there. I guess the organizers thought that would be all the kids would be happy with that. But apparently parents were passing like green bags through the fence to their kids so the kids could fill it up with as many eggs as possible. My favorite quote from the article is one woman complained about the $15 price tag for an Easter egg hunt that included small gift bags with Merry Christmas written.
I'm surprised you could read it.
You're
a father. What would you expect for $15 on an egg hunt? What would you, if Archie went into like a paddock with other children and ran around, what would you expect him to come out with for $15?
Like an enormous amount of chocolate eggs.
Really?
Yeah. Like $15, it's not... That you can get an enormous amount of chocolate eggs for $15, especially if you're getting the shitty kind.
And what about like the security they had to put on, and the amenities, and the liability insurance? Yeah. Come on, Levs, what do they get for their
$15? You should know better, Levs.
Well, I mean, I'm not in Geelong, so I can take the high ground on this and just say that they were in the wrong.
Everyone could take the high ground on Geelong.
It's not quite as controversial as the that Bondi gone wrong public eating thing that we talked about a few weeks ago. But I do love like talking about these doomed events when everyone's complaining about them. I think social media, even though it's like, you know, as someone who runs an event, it's my worst nightmare when people take to social media.
How many Cadbury cream eggs do you get for $15 in the current economy?
Now or before Easter?
Well, yeah. In Geelong, at an Easter egg hunt. Archie, how many should you have walked out with?
Like, okay, four cream eggs. How about that? Is that reasonable?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's
reasonable. I think so. Like, you don't want to give them 20 eggs for $15.
I think the only reason anyone would care about this is if they're a parent. Like, I don't care about that shape, or form.
No, but it's funny.
I'm like,
it's really funny. It sounds like a shambles.
Yeah. How so much? They took the eggs off the kids.
Yeah, no.
To they put them back. No, so other kids could have.
They didn't take the eggs off the kids. Dressed up as an Easter bunny went back and took the eggs out of the kids' bags and baskets. And
definitely,
said they had
definitely
too many.
Malcolm Turnbull.
Did you see that? Did you see Trump's Easter speech thing that he did to a bunch of kids, where he just talked about politics and not about Easter? But there's a shot of Trump with someone in the Easter bunny, and the blurb at the bottom says President of the United States brackets left, just in case anyone couldn't tell the difference.
But the event organizers have sworn off hosting another Easter egg hunt next year. What should they do instead?
They'll just have a bake sale.
They'll go back to the needle collections. They just send them out in bags and tell them to find needles.
There's no photos of Aaron from Igni looking for eggs. Shouts to Igni, the only good thing in Geelong.
Oh, there's actually a couple of good restaurants, but
name them all.
No, I can't. If you look at Aaron, did an article though a couple of weeks ago. You guys should have been all over this. He did a really good story about, I think it was like 10 places to eat between cafes. There's a wine bar. He put a hot chicken project, obviously, which is his.
Is there a KFC in Geelong?
I don't know. His hot chicken project's sick. Mm. But no, there was a couple of good cafes.
Yeah, I went to a really good cafe
French
the morning
bistro
after
as well, which looks awesome. Actually looks really, really good.
Geelong's mad.
Still Geelong.
Just not for Easter eggs.
Come on now.
Or Justin Bieber at festivals.
It just means you can go to Igni and somewhere else.
Also, they have a pirate-themed restaurant on the pier near the beach. We should all go. We should do a live Mitchin episode. We'll fly to Melbourne. We'll do Dracula's. We'll do the witch themed one. Then we'll go do the pirate themed one. You in, Mike?
Yeah. Can we do the Thai themed one as well? It's Chin Chin.
Nailed it. Bloody nailed it. Yeah. I was like, where is he going with this?
2 years I've been trying to get him.
All right. So that's a lovely, lighthearted beginning. And that's as happy as the episode is going to get, I think.
Back to our regular schedule.
Yeah. We're like, Mike Eggert's here. Why are we laughing? I mean, I kind of summed it up all at the beginning yesterday. Malcolm Turnbull announced that there'll be no more 457 visas allowed for people migrating to Australia to work. I don't know the fine print. Do you know more about this?
I read stuff about it and then I got mad about it, so I didn't remember anything. But what I do remember is that of whatever the workforce is, 457 visas make up 1% of the workforce. So really cancelling them doesn't fucking do anything to give people more jobs. And I think, from memory, don't quote me, it was about 46% of hospitality is on 457 visas.
I don't want to do the fine print because it's harder to be opinionated. Yeah. I just want to rattle off facts that I like the sound of and I don't care about
rattle
the other
away
side of the
if
view.
They're true or not.
No, look, everyone else have a say because I'm going to talk. I'm going to yell.
So. Well, I mean, to be as like as you know, obviously, I think this is a stupid decision, but I'm the only one who escaped hospitality at this table.
Yeah,
so
it's
far.
Also a stupid decision because there's when I think it was Julia Gillard tried to do the same thing, Turnbull and everyone's on record being super against it, but now she's on the other foot.
So, couple of points before I get angry, just to give some sort of balance. You hear them come out and talk about how it's really for the IT sector and how the IT has been exploiting migrant labor, paying them 20 to 30% under the award. So effectively cheating out their employers of 30% of their wage. Now, I'll ask a question. Would you expect the IT sector to hire Australians and pay 30% more on their wage costs every year? No fucking chance. They'll just move it offshore. So really, if they're really worried about those jobs, they're going to lose more jobs. Because there's no way in hell a business, any business in the world, is going to go, oh, the government's changed the rules, let's just pay 30% more.
Yeah.
There's no fucking way. They'll move it offshore. They will find a way. Like, that's what businesses do, right? Then they talk about things like security sector, so people in the securities. So, like, security guards becoming obsolete because they'll pay migrant workers less. Well, that should never have been in the skilled visa allowance. Like, I'm not saying that being a security guard is not a good job and not a hard job, but it's definitely not a skilled visa. That was the whole point. They brought this in to take care of the skills shortage. And then thirdly, if you're going to take away the fucking visas, give us back our funding for TAFE. Don't talk about how you want Australians to do these jobs. Don't talk about how you want Australians to fill the void if you're going to take away the fucking TAFE funding and make it a privatized thing. Because that is what the 457s use. They go to the private sector. So the whole thing is a big fucking shambles.
If this is a live episode, everyone will be standing up applauding.
That's my fair point. That's my trying to give a balanced, you know, my take on.
So how far away from the unfair point?
I'm really fucking angry. Like, I think it's real bullshit. I think that the whole thing is short-sighted. I don't want anyone to lose their jobs in the country. I really don't. I don't want to be a chef only looking through blinkers and saying, oh, this industry is going to suffer and you guys are fucked, you've ruined our industry, when other people are losing their jobs. I understand that. If you're in IT, if you're in securities, there's thousands of jobs that are affected. But we have an industry which relies on 457s, and our industry is part of the communities. Now, I can tell you 100 restaurants that are going to go out of business because they don't have skilled labor anymore. Thousands of chefs, front of house, sommeliers, waiters, kitchen hands, students. There's thousands of people this is going to affect within our, like,
immediate
industry.
And these are from multicultural restaurants that benefit from having people from the countries whose food they're representing at
their
restaurant.
It's not even that. It's every single fucking restaurant.
Yeah.
Every single restaurant, no matter what cuisine it is, no matter what style of thing it is. Every single restaurant. I've got people on 457 visas in my restaurants.
From the country of fusion.
Exactly.
I don't want anyone to take this lighthearted. Like, I genuinely am really wrong passionate podcast, about buddy. This. If we can organize things like rootstock, if we can organize festivals in the Margaret River for food, if we can do all sorts of things like that, we need to stand up as a community in hospitality and fight this, because it will really cripple our industry. There's no logic in Turnbull turning to us and saying we should be training young Australians to fill these jobs. We want young Australians in the fucking job. Yeah. There's no young Australians that want this job.
There's almost like this, you know, like Australians don't want to do the jobs that people that are out here on these visas are happy to do.
Why would I train someone for a year who's going to leave when I can train someone that's going to go into the industry? Why do you think we support visas for 3, 4, 5 years? Because there's no one else that wants to do the job. We don't underpay them. Like, they can take that same 4 or 5 visa and go somewhere else. We're already over a barrel. Like, we already pay what we have to pay. Like, you know, I'm not George Columbaris. I don't know how to not pay people. But you know, for the most part, 457s make the same wage as anyone else in the chef industry, in the hospitality industry, because otherwise they'll go somewhere else. But we need to strike, we need to rally, we need to do things. People like Pat Nurse, Miffy Rigby, Terry Durack, all the people that are in the outskirts and the media who rely on the food industry need to fucking write shit about this, because it is a massive deal. I would love to organize a lock-in, just shut on a Saturday night and get every restaurant just to shut and show everyone what it's going to be like. And I know that's going to cost heaps of money, but so is losing all our employees. Like, if we could shut down and just show people what it would be like without restaurants, perhaps they'd actually take some notice. It can't be that fucking hard to go 457 for a chef, allowed. 457 for a security guard,
not allowed. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Please, like, come on. How hard is that?
Yeah.
It's bureaucracy. They fucking love that shit. Fucking Turnbull, a scummy little cucumber.
Scummy now.
It's like an old one now.
So what about people who are already out here on these visas?
I don't know. Are they allowed to stay?
I read something that they're allowed to stay, but I'm not sure if that's permanent. Mac is nodding his head, so that must mean it's right.
It's also finite, though. They're not allowed to just constantly reapply for 457s. Yeah.
Well,
and if they take away the 457...
And then, like, the PR is not easy to come by either. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's major, major issues.
That's permanent residency.
Mm. Yes, sorry. So, you know, like, I mean, I've got guys who work for me who are trying to do English tests, cost them $300 a pop, and they've got to get a minimum of, say, 8 points as an average for speaking, writing, reading, listening. And, you know, I would argue that most Australians would struggle to get an average of 8, you know, writing a 200-word essay in 40 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I think that, like, it's so frustrating to see these guys who are so dedicated to what they do, who contribute to our economy, who, you know,
tourism.
Work so hard. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they want to stay here because they want to work. And they
love the country.
And they love the country. Yeah. You know?
Aren't these the people that all the rednecks want to be, like, immigrating to Australia? Like, I don't mind who comes to Australia because I think it's fair play. But if you're one of those narrow-minded people, surely someone that's hardworking, dedicated, you know, honest, the traits you look for in someone to join your country and your society.
Not when they're stealing our jobs, Mike.
And are they, though? Like, because all those guys can come work in my kitchen whenever they want.
Yeah.
But they won't do it. No. But they want to eat food. Like, they want a burger at Macca's, yeah? And they want a Hungry Jack's, and they want KFC, and they want to go to Hoyt's and get, you know, popcorn and Choc Tops. Well, that's all made on 457 visas, you know what I mean? So these are really good people that love the country and want to stay because, it's, as Kylie said, it's fucking expensive. They pay thousands and thousands of dollars in school, in training, in visas, in fees, like, just constantly. Then they pay tax because they can't hide their wage. Like, they're on the books and they are 100% taxed. They commit to our society, they commit to our economic growth, and they want to take that away. Like, stupid. Such short-sighted politics.
What do we do, though?
We strike. Saturday, everyone's shut.
This Saturday?
Let's put on a party. We'll all go somewhere. And no chefs, no front of house, and everyone can fend for themselves.
It's just this ongoing, ridiculous battle where every week the government announces something else to fuck everyone over. Exactly. But
yeah,
I think this is absolutely something that, you know, like, people are calling this the death of the hospitality industry in Australia.
Mm. It's absolutely the death of it.
You know, is there something to be said that there maybe, you know, do you think with the right encouragement, more people who live in Australia already could take these jobs, essentially,
the jobs have always fucking been there.
Yeah.
There's always been jobs in the hospitality. Mm. There's always been fucking jobs
and
in every industry, and there always will be. Exactly. Like,
we keep fucking opening
restaurants that people. We don't have staff or fucking people to sit in. So the jobs are always going to be there.
And these are, you know, from like, you know, low-skilled kind of, you know, kitchen hand kind of roles to head chefs.
Kylie's head chef, you know.
Like, both of my head chefs.
Yeah. They're both on,
you know, like, pretty much. Ben came over to work. And
Ben Greener from the UK.
Mm-hmm. So he would have been on a 457 when he first got here. And same as Paul, and both of our sous chefs are all on 457s. Like, pretty much the whole of our kitchen would be almost on a 457.
I'm pretty sure the whole of Key's kitchen's on 457.
Merivale's run on 457. Like, are you guys listening to this? Are these the places you like going to? Like, this isn't a keep Sydney open kind of, you know, where people can find their own little way to think it's a bad idea and not support it. This is like every restaurant you love going to, every bar. You know, this affects everybody.
But watch the government spin it so it looks like they're... I mean, they already are. They're putting the positive spin like, no, this is, we're doing this for Australians so Australians can have these jobs. And
but Australians haven't been taking the jobs. There's still jobs. Like, even with 457 visas, there's still not enough fucking staff.
Everyone at this restaurant is hiring currently.
Define what an Australian is. An Australian is an immigrant, basically. Yeah.
For sure.
You know? I'm like, that's the thing, right? Yeah. You know, like, it just kills me. Like, I think about, you know, how far my family's come. My parents came here who were sort of supported by the Australian government, because back in the 70s there weren't enough tradespeople. So they encouraged and paid for immigrants to move out here and put them up. And ironically, my parents lived in Villawood for the first, you know, 6 weeks that they were here, because that's where they housed all the immigrant workers while they got themselves settled. And now it's a detention center for people who are trying to get out. But, you know, like, I consider myself so lucky to be here, and I consider myself to be Australian. And had, you know, those opportunities not come up, you know, I wouldn't be as lucky. And then I look at the guys who are working for me, who are struggling, who are like trying to stay here, trying to like make a better life, trying to contribute to something like that they love and care about. And like, I kind of think like I could so easily be in their position, and you know what I mean? Like, I'm just really lucky that at that time, like, we were so welcoming, and now we're just sort of pushing everyone.
They're already reporting that this is the start of much harder immigration policies for Australia as a whole.
And to what end? Like, for what purpose? Like, what is the actual end goal? Like, do you feel like
keeping baby boomers happy, bro? That's the end.
Yeah, but that's the stupidest thing. Like, we aren't like we have really low like unemployment rates at the moment, and it's basically the people that don't want jobs. You know, like, there's jobs everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I have no fear of getting a job, and I'm not, you know, I'm not particularly special, you know, like, no one is. I hire people constantly. People turn down jobs constantly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We're not out of resources. We've got plenty of resources. We're looking to move suburbs, cities, develop, grow. That's not going to happen through, like, babies. That's 20 years away. You know what I mean? Like, this is the stupidest policy. Like, why try to restrict it? It's just dumb. It's just really stupid. Like, we don't have, like, border problems. There's not billions of people trying to get into this country, you know, and we don't have problems with the people that do come to this country. They make our country so much better.
Exactly.
We always have benefited from it.
Yeah.
It's such a narrow-minded, stupid position to take.
It's such a, like, from a food point of view, like, to be Australian is to embrace multiculturalism, because we don't really have anything beyond that as, like, you know, this, you know, Australian kind of idea of what cuisine is.
Yeah.
Our country is literally founded on exports. That's all we have, is we export everything we make. So we need people to make shit. You know what I mean? And that means we need population. And if everyone's living around the cities, you know, we need people out in the West. We need people out in the country. We need to grow things. We need to make things. Like, we don't have technological advancements in this country. We don't have funded research. The government took that away. You know, all of our stuff comes from exports, whether it's sheep, cattle, everything. So we rely on other countries to buy from us. Yet we won't house people that want to come and work here. It's fucking stupid. Makes no sense.
Well, now we won't even let them come work here.
That's dumb. You know what I mean? I hope China just shuts the border and just goes, screw you.
How many resumes do you think you would get from an Australian citizen?
I haven't had one.
Yeah, I don't. I get maybe in every 50.
Like, just resumes we're talking 50, about, right? People
in
applying.
In every 50 resumes I get, I maybe get two from Australians.
And we're talking about
two born here.
Or like not a permanent citizen.
Permanent resident. That's a less problematic term. It's permanent residents of Australia.
Yeah, but I might get some from permanent residents who have just got their PR.
Yeah.
Like, just now, you know what I mean? Who haven't had it since they were 8 years old or whatever, you know? Like, who just came off their 3 year period or whatever the fuck it is that they have to be here first.
Yeah.
Before they can even apply.
Okay, well, how about citizens then? Because, you know, you don't have to necessarily be born here to be a citizen. Yeah. Like,
it's none.
It's nothing.
It's all people that want jobs. 457s.
Citizens. I love calling. We mean white people. Citizens don't want, like, you know, they want these. They don't want to work in restaurants. They want to work in, like, creative agencies.
Wants to work at restaurants.
No, no one does.
The people that want to work in a restaurant now just want to get on fucking TV and get a cookbook deal and then not work in restaurants anymore. Because that's the other problem that ties into it all.
And that's not going to happen anymore if there's no 457s to run their restaurant.
No.
So all those Donna Hay and Delicious people out there that rely on having, you know, a head chef at Beck and Call to do festivals and all that, they're not going to have the freedom to do that anymore. They're going to be working. So if you want to support that industry and you want to keep your, you know, your festivals and your chef appearances and all that stuff afloat, don't block 457.
Yeah. I mean, it's already been done, right?
I don't know how politics works.
Yeah, me neither.
Because sometimes things go ahead, other things get blocked, other things have to go through.
Go to a vote in the House and then the Senate and whatever.
I don't understand. I don't want to understand it. No, I just want to stop.
Too frustrating. Yeah.
But
everyone, like, crew media should be getting behind this. Everybody, all these fucking people.
If you make a dollar off the industry, get you your ass in about here it. And yeah. help us. Because you won't have one. You're not going to have Mitch there to come and do videos for you because he's going to be working. You know, like he will be like, and if that's
yeah, restaurant absolute survives, botanic.
Like that, everyone should be, all the alcohol industry should be lobbying because we're going to shut and people aren't going to drink. So if you're Carlton United Breweries, if you're, you know, any of those companies,
Diageo, fucking whoever, Bacardi,
all these people that have paid us,
people that have power, people that have power because they have money, that have lobbyists,
yeah,
should be blocking this. That was bad enough when they sat quietly when they kept like the lockouts. Because that affected them in a huge way. But it's going to affect more. Like, the casino's not out of this. They'll be fucking angry. You don't think the casino has 4 5 7s?
They do. Same. That's built it. On it.
Yeah, we have figures in the casino.
But all of them. Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. Not just one good restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
that all, sure. This is huge. Get behind this. Get involved. Get loud. Because it's not going
but
away.
But I mean, like, okay. All right. So, it's all very well and good to say, get loud. Don't ignore this.
Mm-hmm.
What can our listeners do?
Write letters to fucking
have you
Turnbulls.
Ever done that in your life?
No, but I haven't cared about anything enough to do it.
Get on social media.
But social media.
I mean, like,
no, but write, make phone calls to Turnbull's fucking electoral office. Write letters to Turnbull's electoral office. Whatever. The people will see them.
Smarter people than us will start movements.
Yeah.
People that know how to affect change.
Well, I think it's important for our industry to get educated about what we can do. Like, you know what I mean? I think that it's so easy to sort of read an article or see something and be like we all are, you know, like we've probably read maybe one or two things and overheard a couple of conversations.
This cucumber did this.
Right. But, you know, to be honest, like, I'm really still unsure about what this actually means. So I think that it is really important for us to all start getting involved, like getting educated about how this really affects us, what's going to happen. And then that way we can make a better, you know, better choice of how we can.
So if anyone is listening that knows anything about this and can explain it to us more, get in contact with us.
Put it this way, when the lockout started, right? No one really knew what to do about it. But
they kept fucking interviewing me, and
Tyson,
you're no help for anything.
Tyson
just
came on the
worse.
Scene, yeah. Tyson came on the scene and started the movement.
But this is after three other movements had started, and he kind of saw what they were doing wrong and did something
better,
exactly.
So the point is, there's people that will do it the right way. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears open.
Well, obviously, we'll continue this story.
And fucking get behind them. Like, don't wait 2 years. Don't wait 12 months.
Yeah.
When the right politician speaks up, could be, you know, Clover Moore. Could be Penny Wong. You know what I mean? Someone will say something. Someone will start something. When I don't have the power to do that, you know what I mean? I have this as a medium at the moment and an Instagram account. And I'll use it, you know what I mean? And so will you guys. But when the people that have the power and the people that do the right things try, don't let them get shouted down by fucking cucumbers in suits. You support them, back them. Politics should be about the weight of numbers. Australia's forgotten that. The French don't. You know, they get out, they protest, they do whatever they want. Australia doesn't do that.
Well, I mean, I know one really interesting thing that Tyson used to get criticized for was, you know, being so passionate about the lockout laws. Essentially how it is, just, you know, it's about alcohol, it's about life. There are more important things in the world to worry about. But Keep Sydney Open, that movement, you know, it's a gateway to that, shows people how worthwhile protest is as a platform.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you've not been like passionate about protests in the past, but this thing is something that's going to affect you, then this is definitely, like, you know, it is good to be angry about the things that affect you, even though there are bigger issues in the world. You know, you should let your voice be heard when it needs to be heard.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even if you're like, you know, fuck the hospitality industry, if this is just the beginning of a very fucking dark time of, if this gets pushed through and that this is like accepted as okay, what's the fucking next step they're going to take against immigration? I think if enough people go up against this and say that this is fucking shit, and as Australians it's a dumb thing to support, then Hopefully that gets kicked to the curb, and then maybe they leave immigration alone for a little while.
Well, if we all get kicked out of our jobs, we're going to look for new jobs. Mm. So that's going to put pressure on everybody else. So we'll go be labourers, plumbers, electricians, you know what I mean?
Like, I'll go on the dole.
Yeah, there you go. So all the guys that are dentists can pay for Mitch. You know what I mean? It's going to be flow-on effects. You can't shut down the restaurant industry and not expect there to be a flow-on. So if you don't think it affects you, we'll just wait. Because if you drive home and you go past a restaurant, you're going to go past how many? Mm. Well, they're all going to be gone. And there's lots of people working in those. There's not just restaurants. There's delivery drivers. Mm. There's farmers.
Like, suppliers.
The thing is a huge chain. Mm. You know, we're at the end of it. You make the money to pay for farmers. You know, Vicks, Havricks, Johto, you know, companies that import, that provide food for the whole of Australia, you know, we're not going to buy from them anymore. And they buy from the farmers and they buy from the fishermen, you know, and they're all going to struggle. Like, I'm telling you, it's going to happen if the alcohol companies get involved because they got power, they lobby, you know, and the farmers. So if the farmers are listening to the Mitch, I know they are. They love it out there. And the alcohol industry is listening. And anyone else that relies on restaurants and pubs and bars, you know, it's not just a chef and a waiter thing.
Mm.
Yeah, and if you're someone smarter than us, and you're probably not listening, you know, if you have the means to put on something, some form of protest, you know, be it you know some content online or something you know big and public, everyone at this table would like to be involved, and we're good people to get in touch with. To get in touch with other people in the food industry who'd like to be involved too. Yeah. And I hope that everyone listening would support this as well.
It's a little bit like Earth Hour. If you can switch off your lights for an hour, it's going to cost money. Like if Acme shuts for 2 or 3 hours on a Saturday night, it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost Momofuku money, cost Pimbo money. But I'd do it. I'd do it if everyone did it because it would make a big statement. Because that's how big this is, you know? Like no one really always wants to strike and lose money, but it would show the ramifications, you know?
I'm going to write Clover a letter.
And say...
Say, hey, Clover.
Please help us again.
Please help us.
Oh, Penny Wong.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
She's the best. I think she should be the Prime Minister.
You write the Penny and I write the Clover.
Or the President.
I'm pretty sure they're already fighting this, I reckon. I would probably imagine.
But, you know, find out what we can do.
Carly and I will write to cunts. Yeah. We'll write to the cucumbers. You write to the...
Well, whoever gets behind it's going to get a lot of support.
Yes. Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of people that realise how fucked this is. There'll be a small minority that are happy because their partner lost a job or lost a job.
So I just look for as many articles on this announcement as I could, and the only positive spin besides from Turnbull himself comes from fucking Peter Dutton.
He's not even human.
He's a potato. The potato and the cucumber.
He's literally Mr. Potato Head without the pieces. He's like the toy you left under your bed 5 years ago. That's where he gets his opinions from.
Hopefully this gets overturned before the next episode, but if it isn't overturned, we'll keep giving you updates on this. Chef George Kalambaris. Did I do that one right?
No.
Calamari.
Calamari. Thank you so much. You may have seen him. He's arguably the worst host of MasterChef.
Hey, they're all shit.
But isn't he like, he's meant to be the worst as well? Or is Matt Preston meant to be the worst? I don't know. They all suck.
I don't think any of them are meant to be the worst.
Yeah.
Isn't one of them I don't think it's the aim of the show for them to be shit.
Oh, no, it's like opening up a tub of ice cream like Neapolitan. It's all strawberry. It's like all of them are the shit. They're equally as shit. You know what I mean?
But I just kind of have that carry on from like Idol when like Dicko, he was the shit one. Like,
oh, you mean the arsehole one?
The arsehole, yeah.
Oh, they don't have enough personality to pull off those kind of roles. They just say what they say. They eat something. They pretend it's
they
good.
They say what their producers tell them to say.
They're not.
It has to be fresh. That's my George impersonation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he used to be a really good chef, actually. I used to love his restaurant 10 years ago.
So tell me about the history of him as a chef.
I don't know.
But 10 years ago, why'd you like him?
Oh, just an interesting take on Greek food.
Press Club,
yeah. It was good. It was back when the Wiley Phrases of the world and the Grand Akats were laying down some modern things and, you know, simplifying what they did at El Bulli, and people were following through and putting their own spin on it. And George actually did a really good job of it. And Press Club was a really good place because it had modern technique, but it wasn't shit food, which was, you know, it's like Bentley. You know what I mean? That was the Bentley of Melbourne, I would say. And that's when he was good. And then he went big in corporate.
Right. So the Press Club is still around.
Yeah.
And the Hellenic.
Hellenic Republic.
And then he has like a chain. 50
other things, who knows?
He has a bunch of stuff. And obviously he has, you know, big backers and business partners. But this week it was announced that he was underpaying his staff to the tune of $2.6 million. Which he is now going back and paying, but and you know, some of his staff were owed like $100,000 in accrued overtime that they weren't paid properly, apparently there are stories coming out that he was very aware of these problems. People have been talking about it for years. Staff had been, you know, like, protesting it, but it's only in the last week that he's really kind of that he's been forced to,
he lost the case, yeah.
Right, I didn't realize.
I
think whoever bought his group went back and went through everything.
Because it was part of one of the HR systems, is that right?
Yeah, they went back through, and I mean, again, we skim articles and we don't really prepare for what we're going to talk about, but he, yeah, like the accounting arm of the company, that the conglomerate that bought George's empire, went back through everything and then found more and more and more and more and more and got to this point, is my understanding.
Yeah, and as you look into it more and more, there are lots of shitty maneuvers that you know, big restaurant companies do, like signing people onto salaries immediately, which takes away their penalty rates. And he's been a very, very outspoken person against penalty rates. I know we kind of have kind of spoken for and against them in the past as well, but there's some shitty stuff on display, and Mitch wanted to talk about it this week.
No, I just wanted to bring it up because it's worth talking about. It's pretty big news when someone owes 2.6 mil in back pay to staff. But, you know, it's surprising now because, as we sort of discussed before we started recording, it's harder for big companies, it's harder for anyone to not pay people properly now. And the repercussions for not paying people properly are so severe that it's not worth even trying it. You know, so
are there repercussions involved in this?
I'm not sure.
He's paying back, but is he getting penalized?
I'm not sure.
Other than the money that he owed, but that's not a penalty.
Yeah,
that's just back to equilibrium.
I know I'm pretty sure if someone goes to the ombudsman and they find you, I'm pretty sure you get a fine or some shit.
Well, because if I was owed 100K and they hadn't paid it to me for, like, I'd imagine that would be over a period of time.
Yeah,
quite a substantial.
You'd want interest.
You wouldn't have got ripped off 100K in 1 year.
No,
you want interest. So you want.
Yeah.
So is it?
But would you have to take that to the civil court, like,
possibly,
as a personal case, rather than him being fined as a whole? You know what I mean? Like, he's.
Well, yeah, I think there should be three. You should pay back the money, then there should be lawsuits, and then there should be penalties, surely. And this is an admission of guilt. So if you were going to have a civil case, you basically got it. They've just accepted that they did the wrong thing. So, I mean, if you were missing $100,000 and put it in a bank, how much interest would you get for a couple of years? You know,
yeah,
so
totally.
You want that minimum. then it's the whatever the lawyers put on it as a spin.
And he's come out and said that, well, actually half of his staff were overpaid. Bullshit. So and he's doing the very gracious thing of not asking them to pay back the money. Yeah. But then some staff have come back and said, no, that was our overtime.
Yeah.
And, you know, to say that that was our overpay yeah. is fucking insulting.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty surprising. And it's, you know, like the industry has always been one of those things where, you know, you trade off maybe getting paid as much as you think you should for the experience and stuff like that. But, you know, we all know labor costs are fucking high, but we all still pay award wages at a minimum.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And there are some staff have come out and said that they were, you know, being paid under award rate for, you know, their award rate didn't go up over time. Things that are meant to happen automatically. He also came out a couple of years ago in, you know, saying how shit penalty rates were in Australia, particularly saying that, you know, how hard it was to make money on Sundays. Which, you know...
Yeah, you mean, just to clarify, he's saying it's shit they have to pay them, not that they're shit. Not.
Oh, yes, yeah, totally. Yeah. But he... Which is like, you know, admirable in a way, kind of, because we, as, you know, people who have run restaurants, we do... You know, we've all kind of felt the pinch on a Sunday.
Yeah, it just goes into everything, you know? Like, the longer you have staff working for you, the more you need to pay them and the more they deserve to get paid. But at the same time... As anything, you can't put that extra money that goes out the door, you can't put that onto your menu to cover your costs. Yeah. So your profit margins get slimmer and slimmer and slimmer all the time. And that's what leads to people doing shit like this, is to stay in business. You know?
Well, with regards to penalty rates, like I'm personally for them, even though I run the business, which is stupid, I know, because it means we pay more. But you are allowed to put like public holiday loading onto menus and stuff like that. Like, it's not illegal.
Surcharges.
They change it all the time. Like, I don't know if you can do Sunday ones anymore, because you used to be able to put a Sunday surcharge on. And I don't know if you can anymore. I honestly can't keep up with it. Like, they change it a lot. But from where I sit, and I always bring this up, as much as I would love to not pay people $40 an hour to be working on Easter Sunday, or if I can go to the post office on Sunday, then I wouldn't pay, you know. If I could go to the bank on Sunday, then... fine, we won't do penalty rates. If the politicians worked on Saturday and Sunday and they called the House of Representatives and they all got out of their bed and they went in, you know, if they were able to do something on Christmas Day. But if you're not going to do that, and it's not going to be across the board, and we're not going to have a 7-day society, then Saturdays are sacred. And if you want to go and have bacon and eggs, you should be charged, and we should be able to lay the excess on. So if I have to pay people more on a Sunday to work because no one else wants to, that's fine. But I should be able to pass it on to the customer. So that's my only grievance. I think penalties should be there because it's shit.
So he said the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, but he's a fucking idiot. Yeah, so he's on MasterChef and he doesn't pay people.
He even said like the super insulting line of, it's not like they went to university to be able to work on a Sunday.
But they actually are going to university. Yeah. That's why they're
working, you know, on Sundays.
If you want to take away penalties, then you might as well shut Saturday, Sunday, every restaurant. Yeah. Because why would you work Saturday and Sunday in a restaurant
unless you're earning the extra money,
you know? That's how people get through. George is a dick, you know. And it's stupid too, because like so many of the people that run places were the ones that got penalty rates when they were coming through the ranks, and it helped them buy their house or helped them pay for their restaurant that they opened. And then they open and they're like, oh, I don't want to pay penalties. It's like, it goes around about, it should be on the customer. It's the same as GST, penalty rates. It should just be on the customer. And if you don't want to pay it, don't go out on Easter Sunday. But if I have to open, I should be able to put the prices up. Mm. Well, we went to a cafe, they charge 15% extra. Mm. You know,
the thing with the surcharge is, though, that the general public sees that surcharge as being a tip. That goes into the waiters' pockets, and it's not a supplement for the business to pay the waiter's wage, right? So by putting a surcharge on, the waiters get that tip, but the business doesn't make any money from it, and then it stops people from tipping on top as well,
which is shitty. But for one day a week when they get $40-something an hour to work, I think they can live without a tip.
Yeah, 100%.
And I know there's,
but that's what I'm saying, like, it doesn't help the business. Like, that surcharge doesn't help the business cover the gaps.
It should go pretty close. Like, if you, like, we opened Sunday and we put 10% on everything, and at the end of the day, we made an extra $500 or whatever it was from the surcharge. well, that covered the double wages we had to pay for the team. Mm. So for me, that's, you know, it's all, as long as you don't lose money, it's up to you if you open or not.
Are you saying, Mitch, though, that surcharge goes as a service fee?
Yeah.
No, but that's not what the point is. Like, that, the whole point of that.
But a lot of wait staff see that as the point. Yeah, but and they kick up a sting.
That's not what it is.
Yeah.
You don't put it on like that. You put it on as a 10% surcharge, not as a service fee.
Yeah.
We did get less tips, though, which is fine. But as I said,
when you make the 40%.
Did a 6-hour shift, got nearly $50 an hour. They weren't that disappointed.
That's, and that's just the customers going like, oh, well, I'm already paying an extra 10% on top of this. So yeah. Like, you know, that's the tip. You know, yeah, and that's exactly. Like, I think that's just like, you know, that's in their head.
Exactly.
It's not.
I always tip on top of
yeah,
a public.
You're an angel. It'd be nice if people
Mitch.
Did. But
no, it's because I'm in the industry and I understand, you know.
You can understand when they don't.
Yeah.
But it's one day. As long as they tip every other day, it's fine.
Which they don't.
Which they don't.
So since George was forced to pay all the money he owed, forced, fuck, since he rightly paid all the money he owed and hopefully will continue to pay money to other people, Adrian Richardson from La Luna Bistro in Carlton North, from Good Chef, Bad Chef, which is a show apparently. What the fuck's that show about?
They have someone do healthy food and then Adrian does things with beef fat and pork fat and talks it up like it's, I don't know, it's pretty ordinary. It's not every day.
So he's paid a bunch of money to some of his disgruntled staff after failing to pay their penalty rates, and also Ronnie Di Stasio from Cafe Di Stasio in St Kilda has been forced to pay $35,000 to 6 foreign workers who definitely were on 457 visas. Callback.
Yeah. So I don't know if like this happens all the time and it's just been made into a story now for clicks and stuff, or if it's a rare case, or
sounds like a precedent.
And we've had people write in to the Mitch and saying that they're still owed for overtime. You know, they realized they were being underpaid and then the restaurant folded and then that was that. They don't
that's
get their
it.
Money.
Well, that's it. If the restaurant folds,
because they declare bankruptcy.
They go bankrupt. Yeah,
which,
that's it.
Yeah, which is you're fucked.
And, but then they open another restaurant.
You know,
and all the press are like, hey, this guy's opening a new restaurant. Yeah. And then the poor staff are like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I still never understand how suppliers ever use them.
Yeah, me either. And pretend to be and like act like they're still friends.
Yeah, I would just blacklist them.
Anyway, let's finish on a positive note.
On a positive note, our bougie friend Kylie Javier went on a holiday recently. Where'd you go?
I went to the States, Cuba, and Barbados.
The last of those places is where head chef of Momofuku Seibo, Paul Carmichael, is from.
I am now an adopted sister of Paul Carmichael.
So Paul has been on the podcast in the past. He is a extremely like lovely, incredible, good chef.
The best human.
He's one of the best.
Yeah.
He's okay.
How do his family rate to Paul?
They're awesome. Honestly, like, it was definitely a highlight of our trip. I think that I got Paul a lot more being with his family.
Was he with you at the time?
No.
No, wow.
No, he was here I was there. And
did you suggest that you go visit his family or did he insist?
I was like, so we're going to be going to the Caribbean because we were always planning to go to Cuba. And I was like, can I go to Barbados? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, do you think I could go hang with your fam? And he was like, yeah, for sure. Of course you could. Like, that's not even a question. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So, yeah, I mean, like, being me, we planned, you know, every detail. We planned everything out. But pretty much Barbados, like, we were just like, yep, booked our ticket. That's it. Like, they'll come and pick us up.
There was no Barbados Excel document.
Nope.
Do you do that for holidays?
Yeah.
But
yeah, we got there and his parents are like at the airport holding a sign for us.
Oh, man.
And picked us up and they're amazing. Like, pretty much from the first day we were like, so we're just gonna call you mum and dad, is that cool? And they're like, yep. And his mum was like, I'm adopting you. I love you both. And I was like, yeah, we're totally cool with that. And she pretty much just crushed us with food for 3 or 4 days that we were there, and it was the best thing ever.
It looks like, so fucking good, man.
Yeah, it was pretty much
seriously
like
hating you while you're
things that we have on the menu at the restaurant that, you know, relate to Barbados. She cooked for us.
Yeah, like, so you said it, you know, you now get Paul Carmichael a lot more after meeting his family.
Yeah.
But what about his menu? Like, what?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know. I think that, like, Barbados is very easy for me to relate to because all of the tropical ingredients. So it kind of, like, there are a lot of dishes that reminded me of Filipino things and, you know, things like cassava and, like, all the root vegetables like I'd had before, so it wasn't like too weird. But I don't know, I think that it's also that sense of hospitality and like that feeling of being so welcome. I don't know, like that really blew me away, and it's something that I really took away. And I think that, you know, like I kind of want to bring that to the restaurant, you know, like I want people to come in and feel like they came home. It doesn't matter that they don't know us or they don't, you know, we're like these strangers, but when you come into the restaurant, you're at home, like you've come home. And I think like that, in that sense, I really get Paul because he's so open and welcome, and like, yeah, his parents were the best. Like, you know, when we left, I was really sort of sad, and I said to Luke, my husband, I was like, I really miss them. Like, you know, when we were like flying off, I was like, I'm really quite sad. And his mum like was quite teary. Paul was pissed off because he was like, my mum never gets teary when I leave. I was like, yes,
yeah, Paul said at the barbecue last week that his mum hasn't messaged or called him in something like a year, but after Kylie left, she messaged Paul to ask about Kylie. Yeah, and Paul was like, yeah, I'm fine, mum.
Yeah, the food there is awesome. I mean, you know, like I guess like we were spoiled in that you can't just go there and get that experience.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
A lot of it's like super touristy, but yeah, it's just like so fun. Fuck, their family's awesome.
Did you eat anything that you are now insisting Paul puts on the menu at Momo? Or?
Yeah, bakes. So there's these like cassava bakes that mum cooked us for breakfast, and it's like, they're kind of like pancakes, but because they're made with cassava and they're fried, they're kind of like chewy and like a little bit sweet. And she served it with fried salted cod. So it's like salty, sweet, chewy. Oh my God, it was the best thing.
Bar menu.
But yeah, and I said to Paul, I was like, because I sent Paul a photo of his mum cooking his breakfast, and he was like, she's making bakes. Like, I didn't say what she was making, nothing. But he knew from like mum's stance over the stove what she was doing.
Amazing.
Then I sent him a photo of it, and I was like, you need to show me how to make this. Because I was like, I want to make them for breakfast. And like, pretty much, I'm like, yeah, so you're still going to show me how to make the bakes? He's like, are you still going about that? We've got a version of bakes, which is like a fried bread. It doesn't necessarily have to have the cassava on the menu, on the tasting menu, which are awesome. But the cassava bakes are like the best. And I found this feed on I don't know what it was. It was like 21 Bayesian foods you got to try, and we pretty much had every single one of them. I was like, yes,
that's unreal. And so all good. Cooked by his mom.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, there was one night we went out for dinner, and Bridgetown, which is the main town in Barbados, is like pretty empty during the week at night. We were like, oh, we'll just go out for dinner. We're like, oh, there's no one here. Like, what do? We caught a bus home. And that was like pretty much the only day that we ate outside. We also had cutters, which are like a sandwich. So it's called salt bread, and basically it's not called salt bread because it's salty, but most of the bread in Barbados is sweet. So it's a savory bread, which is why it's called a salt bread. So it's like a bread roll, and then it's got just filling. Normally it's fried flying fish. So we went to this beach and had cutters on the beach, and that was awesome.
Unreal.
It was so good. Yeah, but she just cooked for us the whole time. And then on the last day, like the day before it was our last day, she'd spoken to Paul, and he was like, oh, can you make sure they try a couple of these things? Like, they're on the restaurant menu. So she like pretty much cooked us. We had like three dinners that night because she was like, oh, Oh, this is one thing that Paul wanted you to try. So this is your first course. And I'm like, it's a whole plate of food. Like, this isn't an entree even. Like, it's not even an appetizer. Like, it's a whole plate of food, you know. And it was like this thing called, what's it called? It was kind of like grits. It's called... No. Something else. What is it called? I forget.
Mate, you're getting your terminology
I'm
mixed
so
up
confused
again.
Now. I need to go back. But it was like grits. It's like corn, like corn and okra. Fuck, what's it called?
It's okay. You can ask Paul. You can let us know. We'll let everyone know next week.
So good, but it was like a whole plate of that, and then we had dinner with them, and then we had like. Something else. And have you guys had the coconut turnover at the bar?
Mm-hmm.
So there's an actual coconut turnover that you can buy from the bakery, and I hadn't had one yet. So it's like basically like a small loaf of bread with like roasted coconut and spices in it. And so I said to her, I was like, oh yeah, I want to try a turnover. She's like, oh, how many do you want me to get? And I was like, oh, like two, one for Luke, one for me. And she got a six. So on the plane home, like all we ate were coconut turnovers.
That's unreal.
Who's better, Paul or Mum?
Ooh.
Paul's never going to listen to this.
What can I say?
Sorry, Paul.
Mum.
If you want to hear more about Caribbean food, you should definitely go back and listen to an episode we recorded with Jillionaire, one of the guys from Major Lazer. He came on an episode with Clayton like a year and a half ago and told us like that was the first time I ever heard found out about like doubles and bakes and all that stuff. Yeah, we should when he comes out again get him and Paul together for and just make us super jealous of the Caribbean.
No, I'll make him cook.
Yeah.
it'll be such a funny episode too, the two of them together.
Yeah, definitely. Have you guys eaten anywhere good in the last week in Sydney or elsewhere? Any good meals?
Mama and I both ate separately at Bad Hombres on Good Friday.
Which not your mum. You call Kylie mama.
Kylie's mama.
A reason me. That's never been explained.
It's just what it is.
Bad Hombres is a new venture started by one of the partners in it is someone that's been on the podcast a couple of times, Toby Wilson, who used to be behind Ghost Boy Cantina. He's now cooking at Bad Hombres.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like a wine bar that does like vaguely Mexican food.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like is this just a pop-up?
Proudly
it's
vaguely
a pop-up,
Mexican.
Right?
I think they're going to be there for a little while.
They're there until the building gets knocked down.
Yeah, there's a knockdown clause, but it's been denied a few times, so they're just going to roll with it. And Sean McManus from Neighborhood Coffee.
Cool.
He's a legend as well.
Good, some good dishes.
Yeah, it's tasty. Tasty and really fun. Sean's like a real big personality on the floor, so it's pretty fun.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's good. I have a question, Levs.
Yeah,
what's in that plastic bag behind you?
Oh, God. So I've eaten some very good meals in the last. I went to Sixpenny for my wedding anniversary on Thursday last week, and I've never been before, and so I had a great, incredible meal there. And I went to LP's Quality Meats last night with, I have two friends from my family friends that live in North Carolina, and Tom is a 60 something year old Kansas City barbecue official judge. Remember that course that I did last year? I told him how bored I was by it and he was offended. But I took him to LP's because I can't really think of anywhere else that does smoked meat as good as LP's. LP's was fucking phenomenal. It gets better every time I go there. I just watched Shaz in action the entire time. He's a machine, a weapon. He just cuts the fuck out of. He has such good. His form is incredible.
Yeah. That's all Shaz cares about too. He'll be so happy when he hears this because he practices in the mirror. And that's why he wears like the white shoes. Everything. It's all about
the
appearance.
He's a showman.
It's amazing. But like we would like. I just my vision was just dead on looking at him from where I was sitting, and I just like just his knife work. And he just, you know, I don't know, like his butcher skills, I was impressed as hell. It was like,
it would be so, he'd be glowing right now. He's like a peacock. He'll be strutting around LPs listening to this.
They smashed us with food too. But because of that, my new rule now, as this fucking Levens is trying to be healthy updates on the mention, I've lost 5 kilos in less than a month, which is fucking awesome.
Woo,
but because of that, I don't want to fully give up going out to restaurants every now and then. So I'm drinking green smoothies for lunches at the moment.
Right.
So at the moment, I'm drinking. Yeah, the thing in the bag that Mitch is referring to is a obnoxiously green, mostly spinach, a little bit of frozen mango, a frozen banana.
Are you making that yourself?
Yeah.
Do you buy yourself a Nutribullet or?
I don't know. We've had a. What's the more expensive one than Nutribullet?
I don't know.
It's my
Vitaprep.
No, the more expensive one than that. maybe it's a Vitamix. I don't know. I don't know. It cost me fucking heaps, and my wife had to justify it, but we use it. My sister is a proud vegan cook, and so this kind of stuff is not too foreign for me. But yeah, I'm finally drinking stuff with fucking protein powders in it, which is something I never thought I would do. But it's like a natural, like, no, everyone just tuned out anyway. So Mama, before we do our sign-offs, I want you to think about something, because we've been ending every episode since we came back with our guest being forced to choose a song for us to end the episode on.
Shit.
It was Mitch's idea, so you can hate him for it. So
first of all, cuckoo is the dish.
Cuckoo. You it's just did some cuckoo.
Got poon.
No, there's a thing called cassava poon. Cassava poon, which is like a cake.
Right.
But it's, yeah, cuckoo, which is like made from cornmeal and okra. Ah, shit, a song. Damn.
It's all right, you got a while because I'm going to do our social stuff. You can find The Mitchin online, facebook.com/TheMitchin, and definitely get in touch with us.
If you are smart.
If you are smart and want to, if you have any ideas that we could potentially pursue in terms of shutting down this 457 visa shutdown, you can also email us, themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. And we're on Instagram now too.
At The Mitchin.
That's right, at The Mitchin. You can find Mitch at Instakrill on Instagram. I'm Matt Levdog, LEVDAWG. Mike is at Pinbone. And are you still Kylie Javier?
Kylie Javier Ashton.
Oh, you got the full name in there.
Yeah, on Insta.
Yeah, yeah. Sick. Twitter. And definitely go there. Go check out those Barbados holiday pics.
Yeah, that's yes. Sick.
And check out the Batute Advocates take on 457. They got Pauline Hanson saying that 457 visas is not nearly enough to cancel. Which was so good.
We could do an episode with the Batute guys in the future, actually. Yeah. That'd be a good idea. If you don't like that page already, it's a pretty great news parody page. Batute Advocate, look it up. You probably already follow it. You probably see it in your feed all the time. And old relatives occasionally getting tricked into thinking it's real news. Anyway, Kylie, what is the song that we're going to
I'm going to choose Eye of the Tiger.
I'm actually surprised it took this long.
Yeah.
Because I'm fighting in 2 weeks. So if you want to watch some bad bitches boxing.
Really?
I am boxing in 2 weeks.
You're going to Facebook Live it?
Where at?
I don't know. It's for a women's film festival.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So
how long have you been details? Where can we buy tickets?
About 2 years. Hey,
where can we buy tickets?
You can buy killer. Tickets at For Film's Sake. I think is. I don't know what the website is. I'm not sure.
Great. Thanks, Mama. Thanks a lot.
Helpful. Yeah. Super helpful.
Just put a link in your bio.
Well, I'll put him. Yeah. Link in bio.
T's and C's to follow.
All right, I love that this has gone from you only wanted this segment, Mitch, so we could talk about rap every now and then.
No.
That's how you pitched it to me.
Yeah, that's how I pitched it to you.
My song was kind of hip hop.
And now it's, yeah, I love it. It's great. So thank you so much for listening to Mitch. We'll see you next week. And like we say every week at the Mitchin, it's the Eye of the Tiger. It's the something.
Thrill of the fight.
Dun, dun, dun.
Thanks so much, Mike. Thanks so much, Kylie. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, Levins.
See you next week.
Bye, Mitch.
Bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.